We're continuing chapter 30 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And remember, they're in in the forest, and they just saw Grop, and they talked a little about him. Hagrid had already stepped over the great trunk in front of them and was proceeding toward Grop. When he was 10 feet away, he lifted a long, broken bough from the ground, smiled reassuringly over his shoulder at Harry and Hermione, and then poked Grop hard in the middle of the back with the end of the bough. The giant gave a roar that echoed around the silent forest. Birds in the treetops overhead rose twittering from their perches and soared away. In front of Harry and Hermione, meanwhile, the gigantic Grop was rising from the ground, which shuddered as he placed an enormous hand upon it to push himself onto his knees and turned his head to see who and what had disturbed him. "All right, Groppy," said Hagrid in a would-be cheerful voice, backing away with the long bough raised, ready to poke Grop again. "Had a nice sleep, eh?" Harry and Hermione retreated as far away as they could while keeping the giant within their sight. Grop knelt between two trees he had not yet uprooted. They looked up at his startlingly huge face, which resembled a gray full moon swimming in the gloom of the clearing. It was as though the features had been hewn on a great stone ball. The nose was stubby and shapeless, the mouth lopsided and full of misshapen yellow teeth the size of half bricks. The small eyes were a muddy greenish-brown, and just now were half gummed together with sleep. Grop raised dirty knuckles as big as cricket balls to his eyes, rubbed vigorously, and then, without warning, pushed himself onto his feet with surprising speed and agility. "Oh my," Harry heard Hermione squeal, terrified, behind him. The trees to which the other ends of the ropes around Grop's wrists and ankles were attached creaked ominously. He was, as Hagrid had said, at least 16 feet tall. Gazing blearily around, he reached out a hand the size of a beach umbrella, seized a bird's nest from the upper branches of a towering pine, and turned it upside down with a roar of apparent displeasure, as there was no bird in it. Eggs fell like grenades toward the ground, and Hagrid threw his arms over his head to protect himself. "Anyway, Groppy," shouted Hagrid, looking up apprehensively in case of further falling eggs. "I brought some friends to meet you. Remember I told you I might?" "Excuse me. Remember when I said I might have to go on a little trip and leave them to look after you a bit? Remember that, Groppy?" But Grop merely gave another low roar. It was hard to say whether he was listening to Hagrid or whether he even recognized the sounds Hagrid was making as speech. He had now seized the top of the pine tree and was pulling it toward him, evidently for the simple pleasure of seeing how far it would spring back when he let go. "Now, Groppy, don't do that," shouted Hagrid. "That's how you ended up pulling out the others." And sure enough, Harry could see the earth around the tree's roots beginning to crack. "I got company for you," Hagrid shouted. "Company, see? Look down, you big buffoon. I brought you some friends." "Oh, Hagrid, don't," moaned Hermione, but Hagrid had already raised the bough again and gave Grop's knees a sharp poke. The giant let go of the top of the pine tree, which swayed menacingly, and deluged Hagrid with a rain of needles, and looked down. "This," Hagrid said, hastening over to where Harry and Hermione stood, "is Harry, Grop. Harry Potter. He might be coming to visit you if I have to go away, understand?" The giant had already only just realized that Harry and Hermione were there. They watched in great trepidation as he lowered his huge boulder of a head so he could peer blearily at them. "And this is Hermione, see?" Hagrid hesitated. Turning to Hermione, he said, "Would you mind if he called you Hermie, Hermione? It's only a difficult name for him to remember." "No, not at all," squeaked Hermione. "This is Hermie, Grop, and she's going to be coming all. Isn't this nice? Two friends for you? Groppy, no!" Grop's hand had shot out of nowhere toward Hermione. Harry seized her and pulled her backward behind the tree so that Grop's fist scraped the trunk but closed on thin air. "Bad boy, Groppy," Harry heard Hagrid shouting, as Hermione clung to Harry behind the tree, shaking and whimpering. "Very bad boy. You don't grab. Ouch." Harry poked his head out from around the trunk and saw Hagrid lying on his back, his hand over his nose. Grop, apparently losing interest, had straightened up again and was engaged in pulling back the pine as far as it would go. "Right," said Hagrid thickly, getting up with one hand, pinching his bleeding nose, and the other grasping his crossbow. "Well, there you are. You've met him, and now I'll need to know when you come back." "Well, yeah." He looked up at Grop, who was now pulling back the pine with an expression of detached pleasure on his boulderish face. The roots were creaking as he ripped them away from the ground. "Well, I reckon that's enough for one day," said Hagrid. We'll go back now, shall we?" Harry and Hermione nodded. Hagrid shouldered his crossbow again, and, still pinching his nose, led the way back into the trees. Nobody spoke for a while, not even when they heard the distant crash that meant Grop had pulled out the pine tree at last. Hermione's face was pale and set. Harry could not think of a single thing to say. What on earth was going to happen when somebody found out that Hagrid had hidden Grop in the forest? And he had promised that he, Ron, and Hermione would continue Hagrid's totally pointless attempts to civilize the giant. How could Hagrid, even with his immense capacity to delude himself, that famed monsters were lovably harmless, fool himself that Grop would ever be fit to mix with humans? "Hold it," said Hagrid abruptly, just as Harry and Hermione were struggling through a thick patch of knot-grass behind him. He pulled out an arrow from the quiver over his shoulder and fitted it in the crossbow. Harry and Hermione raised their wands. Now that they had stopped walking, they too could hear movement close by. "Oh, blimey," said Hagrid quietly. "I thought we told you, Hagrid," said a deep male voice, "that you are no longer welcome here." A man's naked torso seemed for an instant to be floating toward them through the dappled green half-light. Then they saw that his waist joined smoothly with a horse's chestnut body. The center was proud, high-cheekboned face, and long, blacked hair. Like Hagrid, he was armed. A quiver full of arrows and a longbow were slung over his shoulders. "How are you, Magorian?" said Hagrid warily. The trees behind the center rustled, and four or five more emerged behind him. Harry recognized the black-bodied and bearded Bane, whom he had met nearly 4 years ago on the same night he had met Ferenz. Bane gave no sign he had ever seen Harry before. "So," he said, with a nasty inflection in his voice, before turning immediately to Magorian. "We agreed, I think, what we would do if this human showed his face in the forest again." "This human now, am I?" said Hagrid testily. "Just for stopping all you committing murder?" "You ought not to have meddled, Hagrid," said Magorian. "Our ways are not yours, nor are our laws. Ferenz has betrayed and dishonored us." "I don't know how you worked that out," said Hagrid impatiently. "He's done nothing except to Albus Dumbledore." "Ferenz has entered into servitude to humans," said a gray centaur, with a hard, deeply lined face. "Servitude," said Hagrid scathingly. "He's doing Dumbledore a favor, is all." "He's peddling our knowledge and secrets among humans," said Magorian quietly. "There can be no return from such disgrace." "If you say so," said Hagrid, shrugging. "But personally, I think you're making a big mistake." "As are you, human," said Bane, "coming back into our forest when we warned you." "Now if you listen to me," said Hagrid angrily, "I'll have less of our forest if it's the same to you. It's not up to you who comes and goes in here." "No more than it is up to you, Hagrid," said Magorian smoothly. "I shall let you pass today because you are accompanied by your young..." "They're not his," interrupted Bane contemptuously. "Students, Magorian, from up at the school. They probably have already profited from the traitor Ferenz's teaching." "Nevertheless," said Magorian calmly, "the slaughter of foals is a terrible crime. We do not touch the innocent. Today, Hagrid, you shall pass. Henceforth, stay away from this place. You forfeited the friendship of the centaurs when you helped the traitor Ferenz escape us." "I won't be kept out of the forest by a bunch of mules like you," said Hagrid loudly. "Hagrid," said Hermione in a high-pitched and terrified voice, as both Bane and the gray centaur pawed at the ground. "Let's go, please, let's go." Hagrid moved forward, but his crossbow was still raised and his eyes were fixed threateningly on Magorian. "We know what you are keeping in the forest, Hagrid," Magorian called after them, as the centaurs slipped out of sight, "and our tolerance is waning." Hagrid turned and gave every appearance of wanting to walk straight back toward Magorian again. "You'll tolerate him as long as he is here. It's as much his forest as yours," he yelled, while Harry and Hermione both pushed with all their might against Hagrid's moleskin waistcoat in an effort to keep him moving forward. Still scowling, he looked down. His expression changed to mild surprise at the sight of both of them pushing him. He seemed not to have felt it. "Calm down, you two," he said, turning to walk on as they panted along beside him. "Ruddy old nags, though, eh?" "Hagrid," said Hermione breathlessly, skirting to the patch of nettles they had passed on their way there. "If the centers don't want humans in the forest, it really doesn't look as though Harry and I will be able to." "Ah, you heard what they said," said Hagrid dismissively. "They wouldn't hurt foals. I mean, kids. Anyway, we can't let ourselves be pushed around by that lot." "Nice try," Harry murmured to Hermione, who looked crestfallen. At last, they rejoined the path, and after another 10 minutes, the trees began to thin. They were able to see patches of clear blue sky again, and hear in the distance the definite sounds of cheering and shouting. "Was that another goal?" asked Hagrid, pausing in the shelter of the trees as the Quidditch Stadium gave into view. "Or do you reckon the match is over?" "I don't know," said Hermione miserably. Harry saw she looked much the worse for the wear. Her hair was full of bits of twigs and leaves. Her robes were ripped in several places, and there were numerous scratches on her face and arms. He knew he could look little better. "I reckon it's over, you know," said Hagrid, squinting toward the stadium. "Look, there's people coming out. If you two hurry, you'll be able to blend in with the crowd, and no one knew you weren't there." "Good idea," said Harry. "See you later, then, Hagrid." "I don't believe him," said Hermione in a very unsteady voice the moment they were out of earshot of Hagrid. "I don't believe him. I really don't believe him." "Calm down," said Harry. "Calm down," she said feverishly. A giant in the forest. And we're supposed to give him English lessons? Always assuming, of course, we can get past the herd of murderous centaurs on the way in and out. I don't believe him." "We haven't got to do anything yet," Harry tried to reassure her in a quiet voice, as they joined a stream of jabbering Hufflepuffs heading back toward the castle. "He's not asking us to do anything unless he gets chucked out, and that might not even happen." "Oh, come off it, Harry," said Hermione angrily, stopping dead in her tracks, so that people behind her had to swerve to avoid her. "Of course he's going to get chucked out, and to be perfectly honest, after what we've seen, who can blame Umbridge?" There was a pause in which Harry glared at her, and her eyes filled slowly with tears. "You didn't mean that," said Harry quietly. "No, well, all right, I didn't," she said, wiping her eyes angrily. "But why does he have to make life so difficult for himself? And for us?" "I don't know. Weasley is our king! Weasley is our king! He didn't let the Quaffle in! Weasley is our king!" they heard. "And I wish they'd stop singing that stupid song," Hermione said miserably. "Haven't they gloated enough?" A great tide of students were moving up the sloping lawns from the pitch. "Oh, let's get in before we have to meet the Slytherins," said Hermione. "Weasley can't save anything. He never leaves a single ring. That's why Gryffindors all sing, Weasley's our king." "Hermione," said Harry slowly. The song was growing louder, but it was not issuing from a crowd of green and silver-clad Slytherins, but from a mass of red and gold moving slowly toward the castle, which was bearing a solitary figure upon many shoulders. "Weasley is our king. Weasley is our king. He didn't let the Quaffle in. Weasley is our king." "No," said Hermione in a hushed voice. "Yes," said Harry loudly. "Harry, Hermione," yelled Ron, waving the silver Quidditch cup in the air and looking quite beside himself. "We did it. We won." They beamed up him as he passed. There was a scrum at the door of the castle, and Ron's head got rather badly bumped on the lintel, but no one seemed to want to put him down. Still singing, the crowd squeezed itself into the entrance hall and out of sight. Harry and Hermione watched them go, beaming, until the last echoing strains of Weasley is our king died away. Then they turned to each other, their smiles fading. "We'll save our news till tomorrow, shall we?" said Harry. "Yes, all right," said Hermione wearily. "Not in any hurry." They climbed the steps together. At the front doors, both instinctively looked back at the Forbidden Forest. Harry was not sure whether it was his imagination or not, but he rather thought he saw a small cloud of birds erupting into the air over the treetops in the distance, almost as though the tree in which they had been nesting had just been pulled up by the roots. And that's the end of chapter 30. And next we'll read chapter 31, called Owls.
I hope you like that, my kitten. I hope you sleep well. And you're a sweet kitty boo, and I love you so much. Sweet James. Good night.